You're listening to WRUU-LP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with global soul.
Check, check, one, two. Broke like a little country. Rock and roll and blues. Cause we so love playing. The good people like you. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two.
Welcome to Music Local and Sustainable, the radio show that features discussions with and the music of local musicians. I am your host, Dave Lake. Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I'm talking with Elizabeth Crafton, principal horn player of the Savannah Philharmonic, to talk about the upcoming concert of the Savannah Philharmonic featuring Liz playing Mozart's Horn Concerto No. 4 in E-flat major, Kerschel 495, and with guest conductor Christopher James Lees and the Savannah Philharmonic Chorus, with guest artists performing the Mozart Requiem, Kerschel 626. Coming up this weekend, Saturday, November 15th at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday, November 16th at 3 p.m. Tickets are still available for the Sunday matinee performance at savannahphilharmonic.org. Welcome to Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, Elizabeth Crafton.
Thank you, Dave.
Well, let's get to know Elizabeth Crafton. Tell me your musical journey.
I started playing piano. My mom started teaching me when I was very young, maybe about 4 years old. And then I actually played cello for about a year and a half. But both my parents are trombonists, they're brass musicians. And so they were like, why are we paying for string lessons when we could just teach you ourselves on brass? So then they switched me over to the horn. I actually, fun fact, I did not even know that the front, I didn't know it was a thing. I didn't even know. They just handed it to me and they were like, you're playing this. And I was like, all right. And I think it's going pretty well so far. And then we moved a couple times. I was able to do like all the district band in Allstate with the states in the states that I was in. And then I am now currently in my third year as an undergraduate at the Curtis Institute of Music.
Wow. You're an undergraduate at the Curtis School of Music, yet you are principal horn player for the Savannah Philharmonic.
Yeah. Since Savannahsville is very part-time, there's only maybe 7 or 8 concerts a year. The school will release me for when I need to go, which is very nice of them.
Well, they're training professionals, and so you already got a professional job.
Yeah, I'm very grateful for the experience. It's awesome.
And so, first, let's talk about the horn. Now, French horn. I understand that the word French horn really is specifically referring to the horn with piston valves. And when you have the rotary valves, it's more commonly referred to as just the horn.
People don't really say French horn anymore anyways. When horn players say, like, I play the French horn, they're kind of like, what? Because it's the French horn, it isn't French, it's German. I don't know why it's called that. So
like the English horn, who knows why it's called that?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's because it was just called the horn originally. And then I think in France, they added some things. I think that's why they call it the French horn, but it's not French. So that's why you're not supposed to call it that.
But the Savannah Philharmonic webpage refers to you as a French horn player and refers to the section as French horns.
Yeah, that's for the general public. Because if you just say horn, I think it's just to clarify, because all brass players can be called horns. It's like met a trombone player, we're like, yeah, I got a new horn the other day. No, you got a new trombone. I'm kidding.
Well, let's talk about the horn, because the horn that you play today is certainly not the horn that was used in Mozart's day.
Correct. So I'm playing a horn with valves. And back in Mozart's day, that horn was literally like just a circle. And you could take parts out called crooks and put in either bigger or smaller to change the key of the horn. And so we used to change the notes with literally just our hand and the bell, which would sound kind of funny. And it's very hard. That's why I have a lot of respect for horn players back then, because instead of just like pressing a finger, they had to change their hand all the time in order to change the note. And now we're lucky we have valves and it sounds cleaner, it sounds smoother. But some people actually prefer the natural horn. For instance, the Brahms horn trio, the horns that we play today existed when Brahms wrote that piece, but he specifically asked for the natural horn because he wanted that timbre.
And so to do that today, do you have to use a natural horn?
You can do it on a valve horn. We just have to put, I think our first finger down would put us in the key of E flat, which is the key of what the horn trio was in. And then from there, we have to stop it with our hand because the horn is in the key of F. And so if we just try to just stop it without changing anything, that won't be in the right key because there are certain harmonics where the notes will just fall and it wouldn't be right.
Well, and you have three keys.
I actually have four. I'm playing on a double horn, which is what most people play on past, like, I would say maybe middle school. A single horn has three keys, but a double horn has four, which it has the three regular ones, and then it has an extra little trigger that can put us in the key of B flat to help with the high range. It doesn't change much. It just helps things become clearer, which we need.
But with such a limited number of keys and the high range that you have to do, how else do you do things to change pitch?
Well, each fingering that we have, each individual finger and each combination has a variety of notes. When we press a fingering down, we have to lip whatever note we want. So if I were to put down just the trigger, the fourth extra valve, I can play burr, 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 I can play all those notes. And I can go higher, I can go lower just on that one fingering. So I have to use my face to manipulate the pitch. And we don't want to think too much about that. Because if we try too hard to manipulate our face, it can mess with the tone. So once we have a note, the center of the pitch, it still can be out of tune. So if it's still out of tune and we're in the center of the pitch, which is different on every horn, we use our hand just a little bit to make it flatter or sharper to be in tune with the rest of the orchestra.
And so that's why you always see horn players stick their hand in the bell.
There it is. Yep.
And so pitch is an issue.
I would say so.
And I'll be totally honest with you. I tend to use the French horns as my index of the quality of the orchestra because it's the French horn players and that pitch issue that is really so critical. So, as principal horn player, you're the boss of the section. Do you do anything working with the group in terms of pitch, particularly when pitch is really important? Well, pitch is really important all the time. Yeah, granted. But when the horns are out there front and center, do you work specially with the horn section to make sure pitch is appropriate?
Yeah, of course. There'll be parts in the piece where it's like a horn quartet and some things will be a little off. And so I won't do it right then because that's the group rehearsal time. But during break or the next rehearsal, I'll ask them to come a little early. I'll be like, hey guys, can we just work out this? And then we'll usually start from the root and then add the other notes and just make sure everyone's nice and together.
Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I'm talking with Elizabeth Crafton, principal horn player of the Savannah Philharmonic. But we're here really more to talk about the Mozart Horn Concerto number 4 in E flat major, Kochel 495. They're also doing the Mozart Requiem, and which is a long piece. And so I guess it's part of the conversation would be to do something appropriate for the Requiem. So, why Mozart?
I'm not quite sure, actually. I got an email at the beginning of the year asking if I would like to play, telling me that they were doing a Mozart program. I feel like it's actually something the Philharmonic does well because it's a smaller, quieter ensemble, in my opinion. And I remember playing last year, there was a piano concerto that we did. I think that was the best concert we played that year. It was so fun, and just everyone was so together. And I feel like maybe that's part of the reason that Kay decided to program that is it's a strength of the orchestra. And then also he told me that since I was a new member, he wanted to feature all the new principals. So we just featured the new concertmaster, and I don't know who else is being featured out the rest of the year, but I'm very grateful to have that opportunity. I don't know any deeper reason, but I feel like maybe he considered the strength of the group and wanted to show that. And also the chorus in the Requiem, directed by Paul Thornock. I feel like that's a great combination.
And this is the fourth of Mozart's horn concertos. And why do you think this particular one was picked?
He actually asked me if I wanted to do three or four, and I chose four because I have a history with this piece. I really like this piece. It was like the third movement was the first thing I ever performed in front of an audience. It was just for a competition. I played it with piano, but it was still the very first thing that I did. And I thought it was really fun. I really like the whole piece, obviously. And then I got to play the whole thing. There was this horn camp in Charleston that I did a few years back. I got to play it there. And then I also got to play it on my senior recital in high school. And the more I play it, I just think it's a beautiful piece. I love it so much. And I think taking it from like just the third movement with piano, then playing the whole thing with piano, then playing the whole thing with piano again, but like my recital, and then playing it with an orchestra, just like taking it on that tier. I was like, I'm very excited to finally do that.
It is in three movements, and the first movement is Allegro Maestoso, and this has a wonderful opening by the orchestra that runs about a minute, and then there's a brief horn passage, then the orchestra again, and then you launch into the main theme, and it's really highly lyrical, which of course is the way you want the horn, because it's such a wonderful lyrical instrument. Yes, there are short, quicker runs, particularly in the development of the theme, but it really is just wonderfully lyrical. And then there's a little trill before you go into a short tutti passage in the orchestra. And that actually raises an interesting point of this particular concerto, is because there are horns in the orchestra in this concerto. And so you actually, I think, play with these ripieno horns, these horns in the orchestra.
I actually thought about this earlier today, so I think it's funny that you're bringing this up. I think it's similar to like a violin concerto with the whole violin section. At first, I remember, and like everyone was playing tutti, and everyone was playing with the soloist, and I was kind of like, why are they doing that? I think having the horns in the background is actually very nice because there's a specific passage that I have in my mind right now where I finish a phrase and then they go da-ga-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da And I feel like Mozart loves the timbre of the horn in the background, just like holding long notes with an occasional fast thing. I think he just likes that. Because there's also a violin concerto, I think a violin concerto number 5, where it's the only winds in the entire piece are 2 oboes and 2 horns, which is very interesting. I mean, it's just, I think he just likes the timbre of the horn in the background.
After that little sort of tutti section with the orchestra, you go back to the horn with sort of like a second theme, and you have hints of the last move. You have hints there in that second theme of the last movement. I don't want to spoil it, but there's sort of little hints of a hunting theme in there, in that second theme, at least to me. And then you have the emotional climax of that movement with the upward runs on the horn and the orchestra. And then you have this great section at the end with the orchestra leading up to the return of the theme. It's a sonata form. And return of the theme at the very end.
That's actually my favorite part. I love that part. One thing I like about that part is that you have that whole anticipation going back to the main theme, and then they have the main theme, and you're like, ah. And you kind of expect it to be exactly like it was in the beginning. But then after the first phrase, the orchestra jumps back in with a forte, and it kind of like shocks everyone, and then you come back in. And then it moves on to something else. And it's just, it's so predictable, but so like, oh, at the same time, it's, I love this piece.
Yeah, and to me, having that emotional climax right before the ending. The ending sort of comes like a coda, but it's a coda with the theme. So it's really a very interesting way to present that theme in the final form.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a nice little bow at the end, though. Yeah, I think it's smart how the new section and then the build up to the climax goes like back to the stuff that they were kind of doing at the beginning, and then the cadenza, and then the recap again at the end. I think it's very well written.
Thank you. Thank you.
One thing I really appreciate about this is listening to different people perform this, different recordings, because my favorite recording, the player does not do very much, but it's not like in a bad way. It's very, very simple, but it's like the most beautiful is just played. But there are other recordings where they do so much, so many dynamics, articulation changes, things like that, tempo changes even. And it's very fun the more I run through this piece, like try to decide what I want to do. I mean, I might just be spontaneous, but I can't decide if I just want to like play it. I really appreciate that the way he writes it gives you that option to do what you want.
By the way, what is your favorite recording of this?
It's by the principal horn of the Buffalo Phil. His name is Yatsik. That's my favorite.
I'll have to share with my friend Joanna Folletta that you like that particular version.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the other interesting thing about this score is that the original manuscript was done in multiple colors.
Yes. I love this. Yes. Mozart was a jokester. I think everyone should know this. Mozart was a prankster. And he wrote these concertos, all four. And he wrote this for a family friend. His name is Lloyd Gibb. And Lloyd Gibb was also a jokester. And in these parts, Mozart would write little jokes, and also the different color was a joke, and kind of how it starts on the third beat, but it sounds like a downbeat, that's a joke, and like also resolving on the second beat instead of like the first beat. These are all just like little jokes for him. Lloyd Gibb was supposedly an insane player, like really, really good, and he ended up moving somewhere else and becoming a cheesemonger. He liked cheese. And he still was playing while he did that. And that's when I think that's when Mozart wrote the fourth one. So I think that whole thing is super funny. Like this whole concerto is just a little joke. Yeah.
And also, there was a recent article. No, actually, I think it was from a book that suggested that it actually may have been a code, too, between him and Lloyd Gibb. Mm. Some sort of code between the two of them.
Probably.
This is WRUU-LP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with global soul.
You're listening to WRUU, your local radio station, for people just like you, hosted by people from your community. The voices you hear are your neighbors, coworkers, and others from the Savannah and Lowcountry area. In other words, WRUU is your community radio station. Please help us by donating whatever you can to help your neighbors and friends stay on the air. Go to WRUU.org and support your local radio station. Any amount is welcomed. Thank you for your support of WRUU.
This portion of WRUU's programming is brought to you by listeners like you and by the American Traditions Collection of Concerts, including the Junior American Traditions Competition Finals on Sunday, December 7th at 5:30 p.m. at District Live in the Plant Riverside District, 400 West River Street, Savannah. More information and tickets are available at www.atcsavannah.org. Bach Ascending presents Moonflower, a Robert Hicks Memorial Concert, on Sunday, November 23rd at 4 p.m. in the Lutheran Church of the Ascension Sanctuary. This concert features Deborah Cheryl Ward, horn, Anastasia Petrunia, violin, and Herant Bagration, piano, performing works by Brahms, Bach, and a new commission by composer Kate Kalindo entitled Moonflower. More information can be found at bachascending.com. This music is often called classical music, but remember, Mozart, Beethoven, and Liszt were the rock stars of their time, so I simply call it great music. I'm your host, Dave Lake, and join me for four centuries of great music, with new episodes each week on Sundays from 3 to 5 p.m. We also have encores of these episodes on Saturdays from 3 to 5 p.m. from mid-June to early December. Welcome back to Music Local and Sustainable, and I'm your host, Dave Lake. Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I'm talking with Elizabeth Crafton, principal horn player of the Savannah Philharmonic, to talk about the upcoming concert of the Savannah Philharmonic featuring Liz playing Mozart's Horn Concerto No. 4 in E-flat major, Kerschel 495, and with guest conductor Christopher James Lees and the Savannah Philharmonic Chorus, with guest artists performing the Mozart Requiem, Kerschel 626. Coming up this weekend, Saturday, November 15th at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday, November 16th at 3 p.m. Tickets are still available for the Sunday matinee performance at savannahphilharmonic.org. And so the second movement, Romance, is an andante cantabile. And to me, the word cantabile and horn are almost synonymous, because of the beautiful, flowing sound of the horn. But this opens with the principal theme with the horn in the orchestra, and then we go into the 2D orchestra. Then we return with the horn with a variation enough to maybe call it a second theme. And then we have a return to the principal theme after a little bit of development. And this is really with sort of like a gentle upward run of the horn, and then three quiet chords in the orchestra. Just a beautifully sensitive ending.
Yes, this movement, I think it only has the range of one octave. And I think it's incredible that he wrote something like that with only that small of a range. And it's the most simple, beautiful melody. And it is perfectly in the range for the horn, I think. There's nothing hard. Well, it's hard in a different way, but it's just, you just play. And it just happens. And I used to not like slow movements, actually. I'm a very like, boom, boom, third movement play. Until I really listened to this movement, and that kind of changed my mind. I'm actually really, really excited to play this movement. I've never really I've always focused on the first and the third because they're the hard ones, but this one, there's just so much you can do. And I'm very excited to collaborate with the orchestra, have a talk, you know what I mean? It's like a conversation. It's a walking conversation. That's what it is. You can just picture yourself walking with some trees and leaves falling, and there's like a lake, and it's like a little windy, but you're not walking fast, and you don't know where you're walking. You're just having a nice stroll. That's what I think. Maybe having a conversation with someone you love.
Thank you.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you've come around to second movements. And to put that in context, I can be totally honest here. I have another show called 4 Centuries of Great Music, which is all classical music through 4 centuries. Okay, I bend that rule sometimes because it's meant to be 17th, 18th, 19th, and 20th centuries, which is most of classical music. But occasionally I'll throw in something from the 21st century, and occasionally I'll throw something in from the Renaissance. So I cheat a little bit with that title. It's a two-hour music-only show. But anyways, I did one whole show on adagios, just picking adagios that I love from different works and just playing that as adagio. So that's why I'm very, very pleased that you come around to the second movement. And of course, the third movement is Allegro Vivace. It's a rondo. And this is the one that I was referring to earlier. It's the shortest movement. It's just a tad over 3 minutes, depending on how fast you play it, how vivace it is. And this is a clear hunting theme at the very beginning of the orchestra. And that's what I was referring to earlier on. There's just that, to me, in that second theme of the first movement, there's just a tad of that hunting theme. And then, so this opens with a clear hunting theme in the horn echoed by the orchestra. And throughout this movement is that conversation between the orchestra and the horn. The horn introduces something, the orchestra replies. The horn does something, the orchestra replies. And so it's a rondo. And so you have this constant repeat of the horn theme and the orchestra, horn theme and the orchestra. But the part I like the best is there's this ritardando with just a couple of quiet chords in the horn and the orchestra, and then a larger sustained chord, and then a fast upward run and a slow, serious downward sequence. That section is just wonderful. I don't know why I like it so much.
I think I know exactly what you're talking about, and I like that section too. It's awesome because he'll introduce this playful melody, and you can just stick with it. You can play it over and over again, and then he'll go into something like that, and you're like, oh. It really gets you thinking because he doesn't write minor things very often, which is why in the first movement, that part that you were talking about, I think it's important to play that very differently than the rest of the piece. And same in the second movement, the development where it goes minor, it's so different. It's very unlike him. And there's like a little bit of that in the third movement, just a little bit. It's kind of like looking back on the first two movements, but then he goes right back into being happy. That's a good part. Yeah. And it's also, I think the part that you're talking about with the held chord, it's also somewhat common to do a mini cadenza. And I don't think I'm going to do that because I would say maybe like 50-50 for people who decide to do cadenza, like just a few notes. So I thought that was interesting. It's not written in, but some people do it.
And to me, also, that gives you a chance to do a little rubato. I mean, rubato is not as, I don't know, acceptable, but it's not as commonly heard in something like Mozart, Haydn. I mean, it's really, once you get up into the Romantic period, you put a little bit more rubato into it. But this gives you a little bit of tempo sensitivity.
That's something I really appreciate also, because like you get into Romantic pieces and it's all the time. Like I played the Glier Concerto last year and the whole thing is just mostly doing what you want. And here, I mean, it's so different. Mozart is so different. But the chances that you have to do that, it means so much. Like, it just means so much. And I'm going to try to yoke that as much as I can.
I guess I like that because it gives the orchestra and conductor, but also the soloist, a chance to sort of make things a little bit more individualistic.
Yeah, personal. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, that's what separates the recordings I was talking about. Most of it is very, very this, but like the beginning of the phrase, the end of the phrase, the little things in between, that's what separates people from each other. And that's what makes it individual. And that's, I agree.
So after that, we go back to the hunting call with a variation. And then there's this sort of rising emotional sequence with the orchestra. And then another ritardando with a variation of the hunting theme and the horn. And then the horn and the orchestra come to the end. It's a relatively short movement, but it's just such filled with all these cute little features.
Yes, that ending is one of the things I practiced the most when I first played this. I remember just bop, 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 bomb. Just I literally played that over and over and over and over again. So whenever I get to the part, I'm like, let's go. I do like to think of this movement as like maybe, oh, obviously it's like a hunting theme, but maybe someone's riding on a horse, but the horse is young. So every once in a while it'll stop and like smell something or, oh, look, there's a bird. And that's like the little like, oh, look, there's a puddle, you know? It's just so fun. And I think it's a great ending to the whole concerto because the first two movements are like super, super horn focused. Of course, the third is, it's a horn concerto, but I feel like it's definitely more like a group thing that we can just end all together. And I think it's just a great ending.
Well, and you commented about the conversation that occurs in the second movement, but really it's in this third movement. There's just this constant banter back and forth. And I use the word banter to make it sound fun because this is a really fun movement.
Mm-hmm. It is fun. Yeah, the conversation, I'm excited to experience that for myself because I've always been on the orchestral end of it, like the violin concerto I was talking about earlier. We have these cool labs readings here at Curtis where you can sign up to play your concerto. And that was one of them. And I remember the girl that was playing and conducting, she would like look at us and like do this and then like do her thing. And then we would do it. And it's fun. It's literally fun. It's so fun. And I'm so excited to be able to do that, to be able to share what I have and listen and then react, you know?
Kay is like that too. I mean, you watch him. I probably spent too much time watching him and not paying attention to the orchestra.
I watch him enough.
But it's just wonderful, particularly in choral works. Although he's not conducting this one, and that's Christopher James Lees is conducting this one. But when Kay conducts, you see him do that sort of working with the orchestra. And particularly, I've noticed when he conducts choral music. He's an operatic conductor too. And so he's used to working with vocal musicians. But to work with a group of vocal musicians who are most are not professionals. And so you see that communication on all the time. But he does that with the orchestra too.
I agree. He was the one that conducted the Mozart that I was talking about last year. And he makes it very fun. I'm trying to remember any choral things we did last year. I believe the Christmas concert has some choral things, if I'm not mistaken. And it's easy for a lot of conductors once the chorus comes in to just focus on them and not really give us attention, which is fine. But it's nice that he involves everyone. And it feels like even when he's looking at them, like we're part of it too. And yeah, even though he's not conducting, I'm hoping he'll come. And I hope he enjoys it.
Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I've been talking with Elizabeth Crafton, principal horn player of the Savannah Philharmonic. And we've been talking about the upcoming concert of the Savannah Philharmonic, featuring Liz playing Mozart's Horn Concerto No. 4 in E-flat major, Kerschel 495, with guest conductor Christopher James Lees, and the Savannah Philharmonic Chorus, with guest artists performing the Mozart Requiem, Kerschel 626. And this is coming up this next weekend, Saturday, November 15th at 7:30 p.m., and Sunday, November 16th at 3 p.m. And tickets are still available for the Sunday matinee performance. And you can find those at savannahphilharmonic.org. And Liz, I want to thank you so very much for being on the show tonight.
Thank you for this opportunity, Dave.
We have a few minutes left on tonight's show, so let's listen to Liz play Franz Strauss's Horn Concerto Opus 8, recorded live at the Curtis Institute of Music.
Thank you.
This has been another edition of Music Local and Sustainable, and I've been your host, Dave Lake. Save this time for another show next week.
Well, I know we ain't headed for the Hall of Fame. Gonna give it what we got, man, it ain't no shame. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two.